Listening to the Food Talk Show on Channel Radio. It's the Food Talk Show with me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Sue Nelson. Hello, Sue.
Hello, Paul. I'm straight into work now. You know, last week I was feeling a bit like I was still in Portugal. I had that lovely suntan.
A
and
bit
now
chilled
it's all
and bronzed
back
and all
to
the rest
normal.
Of it. Yeah.
You know what it's like. So did
Absolutely.
You ever go on holiday is a question you ask yourself,
no, see,
isn't it?
After no, you see, back. I don't go on holiday, so I don't have that come down afterwards. That's a cunning plan of mine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, so, as usual, we've got a great show, as you know, and we've got Andrew from Wheeled Smokery, and we've got Noah from Lick.
Absolutely.
And quite looking forward to that. That is alcoholic frozen cocktails.
I noticed that
you always
manage to sneak in something a little bit alcoholic somewhere along the line. There.
Yeah, it's so good because it means I can have it all and you can't have any. And
exactly.
Then we've got Helena, who is True Start Coffee, which is quite unusual, and it's a coffee for athletes.
Wow.
I really want to hear about that.
Oh, I like coffee. Is it going to make me a runner? I'm going to do a marathon, Steve.
Not sure.
That's what I'm going to do.
That's not sure about that.
I'm going to drink a cup of coffee and run a marathon.
He's talking to Steve, who's a guest of ours, sitting in the corner there. I don't know why. Two boys, obviously, having a great time together. You're supposed to be talking to me, Paul.
Oh, sorry, Sue.
Yes, so we're not the boys getting together there.
Hey, I tell you what, have you seen the news this week about radio?
I have. Is this the Radio 1 figures?
Yeah.
They've
interesting,
lost
huh?
Over a million. Listeners, I think.
Yeah.
Why is was that,
it,
Paul?
Was what, it something, you, something they said?
Well, I don't know. Why is that? What, I mean, a million is a huge number. It's not just a change of presenter or anything like that, is it?
No, it's not. And the contrary figure, which I think explains it, is that Radio 4 has gained 1.4 million listeners. And I think what you're seeing is a change in media consumption.
Mm.
Talk radio has started to really take off. It's never been a big phenomenon in the UK. You've always had Radio 4. But if you look at radio in like the US, for instance, talk radio has been a phenomenon in the US for over 40 years.
Yes.
It really hasn't been in the UK because of the nature of radio in the UK and its geographic
layout. It's pretty much owned, isn't it, by the BBC? So the BBC have got, you know, BBC Scotland and BBC Bristol or whatever.
Yeah.
And very, very regionalised, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. But of course, in recent years, we've had LBC and TalkSport and a few other radio stations like that. And all of those talk radio stations have been gaining listeners, as has Channel Radio.
I think when you know you've got your sort of I do Spotify and you've obviously got iTunes and stuff. If I want to listen to music, I can listen to all my own music.
Exactly.
I can listen to thousands and thousands and thousands of things without some DJ wittering on, I have to tell you.
Exactly.
But actually, I do listen to the radio still for a lot of really interesting things. And I think for the Food Talk show, what we're finding is loads of people from all sorts of places, not just in the UK, but abroad, are listening because they're interested in food.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not a geographical thing.
No, I term it a community of interest. So it's community radio for communities of interest. So those people with Food Talk Show that are interested in food, food technology, drink, produce, fresh food, healthy eating, good lifestyle stuff, will listen to the Food Talk Show.
Yes, you don't do any of that though, do you, Paul? You don't
no,
do the healthy
no, no,
eating
no,
or
no.
the, or
let,
the lifestyle
let,
stuff.
Let
but you just talk about
let
it.
Let me quantify this. I come in and talk about it. I then go home
and
have
it.
A kebab.
Yes,
basically.
Yes. And we all know that.
Yeah.
Well, the thing with the programme today, of course, is we've got Andrew from Wheeled Smokery. Mm. And it means we really can talk to an expert about what smoking food is, you know, the different techniques, what to look out for if you see smoked products in the supermarket.
Right.
And it's being able to chat to people and really get to understand that. It's such a luxury and a pleasure, isn't it?
Absolutely. It certainly is. And as it happens, I do know Andrew's products because I actually buy them because I actually like smoked food, especially hot smoked salmon. And he's got some of that over there and you're not having any.
I certainly am having because I'm closer to Andrew than you are physically here at the moment. Wheeled Smokery is I can't wait to get onto that part of the programme. It's award winning. It's won so many awards. And I can just see in front of me there is some hot roast smoked salmon. There's some sliced smoked Scottish salmon. We've got smoked venison, smoked duck, and smoked chicken.
I love it when she talks to me like this.
I love it.
She's teasing me. She's teasing me.
Yes, and obviously I'm gonna crack on with a cocktail, frozen alcoholic stuff.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting because it's somebody once called it pina colada on a stick.
Absolutely.
So I'm gonna have some of that.
For those listeners that don't know, you might want to look at our Twitter feed. We've actually got some pictures of Noah in his ice cream van as well.
Yes, he's pulling up in his ice cream van. So he's coming to the studio.
He's rocked up to the studio in his ice cream van with a little ding 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 ding.
Yeah. So we've got some video of that if you want to check that out. Shall we? With so much to do, shall we have a little bit of tunage and then we're going to talk to Helena about coffee first.
We do want to talk to Helena about coffee. I have got a bit of cheesy tunage. I'm sorry, but I thought you know.
Is it coffee? Are you basing it on coffee, smoking, or cocktails? Coffee.
Do you know?
I bet it's coffee.
It is coffee, but it's funny you should say that because I did go through a funny 5 minutes, okay? There's a tune that I picked, which I'm not going to play, but it was called Coffee and a Cigarette. And I thought
that's not politically correct these days.
No, it
really
wasn't.
Is it?
But it was the nearest thing I could find
to smoking.
Do you get it?
No.
Coffee and smoking.
No.
And I thought, and the only trouble was the tune was so awful. I wouldn't have played it.
So tell me you've got something decent.
I've got Squeeze.
Oh, I quite like Squeeze.
I've got Squeeze, Black Coffee in Bed.
That's fine. We like that.
Oh, now she's gone, and I'm
That wasn't too bad, Paul, actually.
Were you okay with that?
I was okay with that.
Yeah, I've got a squeeze.
I've got a little factoid for you, though.
Okay, go on.
Did you know it takes 42 coffee beans to make the average espresso? Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
42 coffee
beans. I love an espresso as well.
I know you do.
I love a double espresso. So that's 84 in my book.
Probably.
Yeah.
We're going to talk to
Do you know 42 is the meaning of life as well?
I know it is. Yeah, okay. Yes. We're going to talk to Helena in a minute. True Start Coffee. Now, I'm quite interested in this. It's developed for athletes.
Like me.
Well, maybe not. But it's the only coffee in the world designed specifically for sports performance by providing the optimum level of natural caffeine.
Absolutely.
It's supposed to give you a lift without the unpredictable highs, lows and crashes. And I know that caffeine levels in regular coffee varies from about 50 milligrams to about 350 milligrams of caffeine per cup.
Mm-hmm.
And also caffeine can take about 45 minutes to fully absorb. But I don't really understand, Paul, what natural caffeine means.
Maybe Helena can tell us.
I'm hoping Helena's there. Hello, Helena, how are you?
Hi, I'm great, thanks, guys. How are you?
Good, really good. Tell us about natural caffeine. What is it?
Natural caffeine is what you find in, of course, coffee, lots of other plants as well. And the big difference is versus synthetic caffeine, which is what you tend to find in your traditional sugary energy drinks, most energy gels, and of course caffeine pills. So synthetic caffeine is made in a lab, tends to get absorbed into your bloodstream quicker than natural caffeine.
Oh, okay.
So you can be a lot more susceptible to that energy spike and of course the crash. Whereas natural caffeine is naturally more slow releasing, so it's ideal for endurance.
So if I had a cup of Nescafe, does that have synthetic? I'm probably not allowed to say because you get a lawsuit against you, but let's say a normal high street brand of coffee. Do they use synthetic then, or is that natural?
No. So coffee is natural caffeine. Some brands may use some synthetics during the process, like solvents to wash the beans, for example. But coffee contains natural caffeine. The big difference with all other coffee in True Start is we give you a measured optimum level of caffeine. All other natural caffeine sources vary from cup to cup.
Oh, so you know exactly.
Which is fine if you're. Oh, sorry.
I was going to say you know exactly what you're getting. A bit like if you buy gin or beer, you know the percentage proof. You know exactly what you're getting. Is that what you're saying with your product?
That is exactly it. It would be crazy if you bought a bottle of wine and you didn't know whether it was 5% or 50% alcohol.
But that's the second bottle, apparently.
Give you a good excuse, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Exactly, and it's fine if you're in a cafe. Not knowing the caffeine because it's not really the primary reason you're drinking it. But when you're drinking that coffee for sport instead of a synthetic caffeine option, then you really need to know you're having enough to impact your performance without overdosing.
Sure.
And so why is caffeine good for sports performance? I think Paul was just about to ask that question.
I was just about to say that. She stole my thunder, Helena.
Caffeine is actually one of the, I would say, it's the most well-researched legal performance. Legal is a key one there.
Yeah.
Performance enhancer. There's a lot of well-known reasons that caffeine improves your endurance. Things like sharpened focus and improved mental performance are things that most of us are fairly aware of. But caffeine also reduces your rate of perceived exertion. So if you're training as hard as you're normally training in the gym, it actually feels like you're training less hard, so you can push yourself even harder. And there's a lot of research around caffeine mobilizing your fat stores, which makes it easier for your body to burn fat as an energy source rather than just relying on your carbohydrate stores. So essentially, you have two energy tanks. You have more energy. So for endurance, that's just ideal.
Well, two things there. I consume an awful lot of coffee.
Why aren't you thin, Paul?
I consume an awful lot of coffee. So if what Helena says is true, and I have no reason to doubt her at all, if I didn't drink coffee, I would be in a terrible place. A terrible place.
You would.
Helena, I wanted to ask you, and you might not know the answer to this. I don't know if you're a microbiologist or whatever.
I'm not.
what is it about caffeine that has that effect? You know, what does it actually do?
So I know at a really, really basic level, just so you know, Simon's my husband and my co-founder, we don't have a science background at all. We don't have a coffee background at all. We recruit amazing people who do, but it's certainly not us. We were the hobby triathletes that came up with the idea.
Right, okay.
But caffeine is essentially passed through the blood-brain barrier very easily. So your brain can easily absorb it, and it has these effects on your nervous system.
Okay.
And I know that...
We do have loads of info on the website that our amazing partners have written for us.
A little bit more
jargon.
You've got some very, very impressive athletes on your website. You've got professional cyclists, triathletes, swimmers, runners. And how has it helped them? I mean, they seem very keen to endorse your product. So they must be absolutely convinced.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said about caffeine being so well researched, caffeine's been... really prevalent in sport for a while, and overall people are wanting to rely less and less on synthetic nutrition in general. It's not just caffeine and coffee, but people are moving away from your sort of traditional sports nutrition that might have been full of stuff you don't necessarily want to put in your body. Hence the rise of all of these fantastic natural energy products. You know, coconut water is a huge thing now. Generally, the market wants naturally derived products. So a lot of the athletes we work with either were drinking coffee already before training, or they wanted to because they wanted a natural alternative to the synthetic options. But there was nothing out there that enabled them to control their intake. So a lot of them would either be having a coffee and hoping for the best, or sticking to their synthetic options, just like we were. Yeah. Always drinking coffee before training. And one day we'd be having heart palpitations out on the bike, and then nothing the next.
Yeah. So. And you ethically source your coffee beans, I know. Is it from Colombia, I think?
It is from Colombia. So I used to live in Colombia, so I'm biased.
Yes.
But I think that Colombian coffee is really the best in the world. So it's all single source Colombian Arabica. And the wonderful thing about Colombia is... unlike some other coffee producing nations, the coffee industry is structured in a way that's very family centric in Colombia. It's made up 95% of small family owned farms, and the government have a lot of protections in place for the farmers.
Just as a point of interest, as you're Colombian, kind of.
No, I'm not.
How does coffee grow? Is it a plant, a bush, a tree?
Yeah, it grows in coffee beans. It's a bush, I guess. It's a plant. And it grows sort of what they call green coffee beans, which are actually berries.
Right, okay.
And then they get dried and they get roasted, and it ends up throughout the process becoming what you and I know as coffee.
Okay, cool.
Bit like, it's quite like chocolate, actually, Paul.
Yeah.
The same type of thing, cocoa beans, coffee beans.
Yeah. I was
caffeine in cocoa beans too.
Yeah, sure.
Cool. No, I was trying to find out how tall you needed to be to pick them, kind of thing, whether it was a tree or a bush.
I think you can be fairly short.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know you're incredibly fit yourself, and you've done the Ironman Challenge, and you're also entering the Iceman Challenge, presumably fueled on True Start Coffee. What is an Iceman Challenge?
Iceman is actually an event run by one of our awesome partners, Human Race, and it's an off-road duathlon, so mountain biking, cross-country running, and it's called Iceman because it's in the middle of winter. And actually, this is one that our new sales and marketing director, who absolutely loves mountain biking, he really wants us to do it together, so I've agreed to do it with him. it's just a bit of fun, really. We do that a lot.
Hold on. A bit of fun. What is she talking about? A bit of fun.
I have no idea.
We like to do a lot. We exercise together as a team, and we like to involve our customers. Okay. That's part of that, really.
Brilliant. So it's called True Start Coffee, and I believe your website is truestartcoffee.com.
Correct,
it's a really great website. Loads and loads of athletes on there, sort of explaining, you know, what they do. So if you are thinking of doing any athletic challenges, I don't know, Steve in the studio is doing a huge bike ride here. Walking thing. That's right, you did a bike ride last time. Go on there, because it's quite inspiring, isn't it, Helena, looking at all those people. I believe
They are inspiring.
Also, on your website, it tells you what retailers online you can access in order to get your product. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. We sell directly, but we've got some fantastic retail partners as well. So we want to make it available in the places that people have asked for it. That's what we're focused on.
Cool. So how are you selling it at the moment?
It's on online retail mostly.
And bricks and mortar as well, like Holland & Barrett, for example. They're one of our key retailers.
Okay, cool.
So trot along to Holland & Barrett, or go online at truestartcoffee.com and be inspired, I would say. And thank you very much for joining us, Helena. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Very welcome. I'd love it if readers launch their personal challenge with TreeStar. That's what we're all about, helping them launch their challenge.
Yeah, so get on that website.
Fantastic. And good luck with the Iceman or Ice Lady, Ice Woman challenge. Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Been a pleasure to talk.
And you. Take care, Helena.
Take care.
Yeah, cheers. Bye.
Wow, fit lady. I'm not sure I could. If you do go on that website, Paul, it is inspiring, but it's also slightly intimidating. These people are really, really good athletes. Interesting, they're using coffee.
I'm exhausted now just talking to her.
Are you hungry as well?
Oh, what?
Are you hungry as well as exhausted?
I am. I just seen what came through the door too.
It's not just what's come through the door. It's the smell. It's the smell of it. And the smell is, we've got Andrew Wickham from Wheeled Smokery, who we're going to talk to in a minute. And we've just bought in all these beautiful smoke products. They smell delicious. You can almost smell that sort of oakiness. Mm. So for those people who don't know about smoked food, this is where an ingredient is exposed to smoke. This is where Andrew's going to tell I'm wrong, but from burning or smouldering wood. And meats and fish are the most common smoked foods, although you can get cheeses smoked, vegetables smoked, and other ingredients smoked. So you can have smoked elements to whiskey. I think you can even get smoked tea, Paul, actually, for example.
You can, actually.
I think you can.
I actually have some smoked tea bags.
There you go. In Europe, oak is often used for smoking and beech to a lesser extent. But in North America, they use hickory and pecan and maple and fruit tree woods such as apple and cherry.
Sorry, it just wafted over my side and I'm getting all excited now.
Yeah. And there are two types of smoking. There's cold smoking and hot smoking. And cold smoking still uses burnt wood, but it's done at a much lower temperature, so typically 20 to 30 degrees centigrade. And cold smoking doesn't necessarily cook food, so we're going to ask Andrew a little bit about that.
I'm fascinated by this. I like smoked food.
I do.
And one of the things, and this might not be appropriate, but one of my big things is Arbroath Smokies, if you ever come across such a thing, which I absolutely loved. And yeah. I worked in Scotland many years ago on an ad hoc basis, and there were still some artisan smokers of such delight.
Does smell your house out, though, unfortunately, Arbroath Smokies. Hot smoking's obviously smoking, but at a much higher temperature, normally 52 to 80 degrees centigrade. And although foods that have been hot smoked can often be reheated or cooked, typically they're safe to eat without further cooking because that smoking, you know, at that temperature's cooked it. So you will get hams and ham hocks that are fully cooked once they've been properly smoked. And at Wheeled Smokery, they only use oak, which they burn in their own kilns to give it an authentic flavour. And they've won so many awards, Paul. You can't even list them because there's so many, because what they do is so good.
It's also interesting, historically, of course, being in the Weald, that the Weald as an ancient forest many years ago, that was its purpose in life, was to do such things as charcoal making, smoking food, and iron smelting.
Yeah.
Because of the oldest, huge amount of wood there.
Yeah, of course, it's the oldest form of cookery, isn't it? Mm. Well, Wheeled Smokery produce all these really traditional smoked food, and Andrew bought the business back in 1990, and he recognised the potential for a truly authentic smokery. Mm. And along with his wife, they've opened up a new shop. They did that in 1999. They built a new smokehouse, and they now have a team of 25 people.
Wow.
So welcome, Andrew. And wow, I don't even know where to start. I'm going to taste some in a minute. What's your personal favourite? Fish, meat? We've got some smoked salmon here. Venison. What's your favourite?
I think my favourite must be the cold smoked salmon.
Cold smoked salmon.
That's something that I'll still eat. But I have to eat it in the right environment, you know, when it's sort of presented, you know, with friends and things like that. I don't tend to eat it at work.
Right. So you don't nibble, you don't graze.
Do you know, Paul, I was just chatting to Andrew before he came on, and he said he's been involved in smoking for so long he's slightly gone off it.
Yeah, but I was rather hoping you wouldn't mention that.
There's certain products that you really, really like, isn't there? But you don't eat it at work because you're just surrounded by it all the time.
Yeah, that's right. As I say, the smoked salmon I enjoy. I eat the bacon very regularly for breakfast. The smoked haddock I enjoy still. The other products, they're all very, very good, and I will enjoy them, you know, if I'm, as I say, having a dinner with friends and presented, you know, with all the right accoutrements with it. But as I say, I don't just graze from the fridge with it anymore.
Well, I would.
But I rather hope my customers do.
Yes. So I've just handed Paul some smoked venison. Now, the venison is a beautiful, beautiful sort of ruby, dark ruby colour. And the smell is gorgeous. I'm going to ask you to talk, Paul, because I'm going to eat
the
now.
The taste isn't rubbish either. It tastes absolutely divine. It's got a really nice consistency as well. As you say, it's a lovely ruby colour. It's got a fabulous smell. I've eaten most of it now, sorry.
It's got a very long aftertaste, hasn't it, Andrew? And it's really lovely. Where do you get your venison from?
Well, the venison comes from Yorkshire. It's actually farmed venison. That gives us the consistency.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, people tend to think wild is best. Not always the case. With the venison, you want consistency, and that's what the farming of the venison does give us. You could end up with, you know, a really old stag that would be very, if it was wild, you know, it'd be very tough and unpredictable. So we go for the farmed.
Sorry,
it's a very strong taste as well, venison, isn't it? Very, very, very strong taste.
But what Andrew just said is absolutely spot on, which is why my comment was the texture of it was really nice as well. It can be tough. Some of those kind of venison products, and it wasn't remotely tough. It was really melt in the mouth.
I've just handed Paul some smoked duck. Smoked duck is again a very, very strong meat, or it can be. This is very fine. It's absolutely beautiful, and it's quite it's not a very sort of coloured meat, so it looks a bit like ham. God, it tastes absolutely gorgeous. I really like that. It's not as strong as venison, is it? It's absolutely lovely.
No, it's not. It's all of these meats, though. For me, I far prefer something like this than just cold meat. Just normal cold meat is fairly boring, and the smoking of this is not overpowering.
That's one of the things I was going to say. Quite often I'll get a plate of charcuterie, particularly Italian or Spanish. It's very, very spiced. So you'll get salamis and you'll get that sort of stuff. These are really fine and very, very sophisticated, I would say. Gorgeous smoking taste, but quite sophisticated. Are these hot smoked or cold smoked, Andrew, these meats?
Well, the venison is cold smoked, so that's a very long process. The duck is hot smoked, so therefore, by definition, it's been cooked. Hot smoking means it's been cooked. So it's been taken up to an oven temperature, and our ovens are fired by oak logs, so not heated by gas or electricity, heated by wood.
So can you describe your kilns to us? I always see pictures, you know, on the internet or on television where you've got things hanging up. So you've got fish hanging or you've got meat hanging. Is that what happens? How do you actually do smoking where you are?
Yeah, well, the hot smoking is the product is hung. It's hung off hooks inside the kiln. So, for example, if we were doing a chicken breast, we would hook two chicken breasts together and then hang it inside what looks like a big oven. The only difference is that underneath the oven is a pile of logs, flaming logs. And I think that's very rare nowadays in a smokery. You won't often find a pile of flaming logs. You'll probably have had the heat generated by some other means.
Okay, so really people are allowed to do that? So they're not actually burning oak like you do, so you get that lovely oak infusion. Are they using, they're trying to cook it and then they're artificially trying to inject it or do something to give it that smoky flavour, is that right?
Well, I think that there may be some people that sell artificially flavoured smoked products, but that's not the case all the time. I mean, we're an artisan food smokery, so that's the way we do it. But the smoke flavour is produced by the smoke from the logs.
Yes.
You could heat the oven, as I say, with gas or electricity, and then waft smoke over from burning shavings or the like. So I'm not insinuating that other smokeries don't smoke the products. They more than likely do.
They do it in a different way.
They just do it in a different way.
So they use sort of chippings.
They use chippings in a preheated oven. But as I say, there are some people who sell smoked food, you know, rather like a cheese and onion crisp, doesn't have any cheese or onion in it. Neither does a lot of smoked food.
Because when you go into the supermarket sometimes and you see smoked salmon, and it's always got that particular colour. Smoked doesn't mean that somebody set light to a log and then they're suspended the fish above, by any means, does it? There's no regulation on what smoked actually means.
No, that is correct. I mean, I'd like to think that the majority of smoked things has actually been smoked, but I fear that that isn't the case. I mean, because it's not the environment that I actually come from, I wouldn't really know for sure how people who don't do it correctly do it. But I'm guessing that there are a lot of places where it's just flavoured with smoke.
Cool. Could you just describe, Andrew, cold smoking and what the process is and how long it takes?
Yeah, certainly. Cold smoking is a very much slower process than hot smoking. Cold smoking is done by curing the product, first of all, with salt. By curing it, you're taking out the moisture. So the salt, the dry salt, is in the case of salmon, is spread over the side of salmon, draws out the moisture, rather like if you had a wine stain on your carpet, you might put salt on it, it draws the moisture out of the carpet. The same would happen with your side of salmon. When the moisture has been taken out of it, you're then reducing the potential for deterioration bacterias, and then it makes it safe to eat. And then the drying process of the smoking continues that moisture taking out process. So it's a very age old preservation method, smoking.
Right. Mm. And how long is the you've landed your salmon, you've knocked it on the head, and you cut a slice off, you salt it. How long does the process take until you've completed the cold smoking?
Yeah. Well, our process starts on a Tuesday and ends on a Friday. So,
wow.
So in answer to your question, the curing is overnight, and then the smoking can take up to 2 days.
Wow.
Then it needs to rest so that the flavours can permeate through. And then after that, it gets trimmed. And then after the trimming comes the slicing.
Right.
So actually, no, more like the next Monday, actually. You know, we very rarely would have it on the Friday. It would be the next Monday. So it's almost 6 days.
Okay, so that's an interesting snippet that Andrew threw in there, because I'm trying to picture in my head how this works. So with something like salmon, you smoke the whole salmon and then slice it when the process is finished?
Yes.
Okay, because I imagined you sliced it and kind of hung it up in little wavy slices.
No.
So you got
No.
No, that's not going to work, Paul.
Well, that's why I'm asking. The man's an expert. That's why I'm asking him.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from.
I tell you what.
I've just toasted.
I'm just going to eat some more salmon while you're
doing that. Can you not eat all of it, though, because that is particularly gorgeous? I'm just eating the hot roast smoked salmon. And a lot of people will look at a price of that and say, £5 or £6, that's a lot of money. When you actually look at the process, you really can understand how much time and effort that's taken. It tastes amazing. It tastes absolutely gorgeous.
But
it's beautiful flakes of salmon. Lovely.
At the cost of appearing a Philistine, my kebabs cost that.
I wish you wouldn't keep mentioning kebabs. I know. It makes me upset.
I know. That's why I do it. Mm. But that is a slightly better product than my kebabs. I would hesitate to add.
It's really lovely. Mm. How do you make sure that you bring out the natural sort of taste profile and make sure that you don't, you know, it's not too oaky or not oaky enough? Because I think it's the duck is actually quite fine and it's got a lovely smoky flavour, but it's not overpowering the duck. This has got a lovely smoky, you know, flavour. Do you just experiment until you get it right, or does it vary?
Yeah, I mean, it's an artisan method, so no batch will be identical. You know, there's all sorts of variants that will change, including the weather. But we try to maintain a consistency, but the length of time it takes is dependent on the weather. As far as the smokiness is concerned, that's all about how long we keep something in the kiln for. In the case of the hot smoking, it's the length of time that we expose it to smoke after the cooking process. So we will put the product inside this flaming kiln. We will cook it first, then we block off the chimney, and the smoke then permeates inside the kiln, and we regulate the amount of smoke that goes through it and the time that it's in the kiln.
So with the hot smoked salmon, which is your product that I buy the most, because I like it the most, what is the quality that makes it hot?
The temperature, isn't it? Yeah, and the length of time.
Yep. The reason it's called hot smoked is because it's gone through a cooking process.
Right.
That's the product, actually, that we won our recent Gold Award for in the 2016.
And quite well-deserved.
And very, very, very well-deserved. Don't just smoke, meat and fish, though. I know you smoke cheese. Can you just smoke any cheese? I mean, I can't imagine. Can you smoke soft brie cheese, and hard cheese? Can you smoke any cheese?
You can smoke any cheese. Funny enough, I was rung up only this week asking if I would smoke some brie. I was slightly nervous because the problem with brie is that, the problem with any cheese, actually, is once a cheese starts its ripening process, you can't reverse it. And I think that the smoking process, because of the amount of heat that's inside the kiln, even with the cold smoking, there would be a degree of heat that would ripen the cheese, and then you'd have to eat it.
Doesn't it melt the cheese?
If the temperature got too high, it would melt the cheese. Mm. So I said to the person, deliver it to me in a very raw state. Mm. I will then smoke it, and then he or she can ripen it when they get back.
Okay, that makes sense.
It does.
And do you smoke other things like olives or any other types of stuff, or is it just sort of cheese?
You can smoke anything pretty much. We've smoked salt in the past. We've smoked garlic. I'm just thinking of some of the more sort of strange things. We don't smoke olives. We could do. Mm. The reason we don't is that we don't feel that there's a market for it. Or that we've tried it in the past and it hasn't worked. Mm. When I say hasn't worked, the customers haven't been interested in trying them.
Yeah, sure. I know that a lot of people are starting to buy equipment and smoke their own food at home. It's becoming quite fashionable. But on the serious side, there are dangers to smoking food, isn't there, in relation to food poisoning and very particular types of organisms that can develop. So what can go wrong if you're smoking your own food?
Yeah, biggest worry would be people trying hot smoking and not cooking the product for long enough or at high enough temperatures. Because if you're smoking something like chicken, chicken has the risk of salmonella and things like that, which will be killed in the cooking process. So if someone was to do it at home and didn't have the expertise or the thermometers available to get it up to a cooking temperature, then they would be running a risk. Similarly, with cold smoking, because there's no cooking whatsoever, you're relying totally on your drying. And if you don't get the drying right, then the inherent bacteria would be remaining within the product, and there would be nothing else to safeguard you after eating it, that there aren't some bacteria going inside your body.
Mm. So you've got to be really careful, make sure you get your temperatures right, probably do the old Google thing, make sure you really understand what you're doing, test it. Personally, I would never smoke chicken if I was doing it myself. I mean, I think chicken's a pretty dangerous thing to do if you're not experienced. But presumably with things like fish and with cheese, smoking it's probably not a problem if you're trying to do it at home.
Yeah, you could try cheese. It wouldn't come to too much harm. People can have a lot of fun experimenting, and the curing is not that difficult. I shouldn't be saying that, really, but because otherwise I put myself out of business. But it's not that difficult. You can read up on it and do it at home. But as I say, you really have got to get it right, because if you don't get it right, then you're putting yourself at risk.
And other people, of course, if you're inviting them around for dinner.
Yeah, quite right.
The process of salting and smoking, as you made reference to earlier, Andrew, is a very ancient technique for food preservation. When done correctly, and which is what you do rather than these home producers, how long will your products last? How long? I know that's probably an open-ended question.
Is that because, people used to smoke stuff to preserve it in the old days?
Exactly.
Because they didn't have stuff, so they just think, well, how am I going to make my food during the winter? So smoking to preserve.
So things like salted fish and smoked fish and smoked meats were done when they were available and then kept for use over the winter.
Have a glut.
Yeah.
Mm. The longer you dry something for, or the drier you make it, the longer it'll last for. So the cavemen, going back all those hundreds of thousands of years, They would have done it to preserve their meat and fish, and they would have probably salted it very heavily, and it would have become really quite unpalatable. We now use the same methods, but we make it more palatable by not putting so much salt on. And also, we have refrigerators, whereas they didn't. So we can preserve our food by vacuum packing. That takes the moisture out, takes the air out, rather, and then refrigeration. So, I mean, our packs there will last for about 3 weeks in the fridge, and then you can freeze it afterwards if you want.
So, really, I guess what you're saying is, with modern techniques for preserving food as well, you don't need to be so harsh in terms of the salting and smoking as you would have done in the past.
Yeah, we do it now for taste and pleasure. In the old days, they did it for preservation and survival.
For a need, absolutely.
And can you tell me what the what a kipper is? And also, Paul's was talking about Arbroath smokies again. What exactly are those? What are kippers?
Kippers are smoked herring.
So it's a herring. It's a herring. Yeah. Do you do kippers?
We sell kippers, but we don't actually do them ourselves at Flimwell. We buy those in from Craster in Northumberland.
And why do you do that? Just really good quality stuff?
They're the experts up there. That's all they do, pretty much. Also, the sort of volume that we would have to do would then fill up our kilns with things that we could otherwise have filled up with other things that we think are more appropriate.
And can you put different things in the kiln together? So, would you know, if I put the salmon and I add the sort of chicken or the duck, does the flavour impart each other? Can you put loads of different stuff up in one thing?
You can't put things together because they would taint each other. Also, the length of time is different for different products. So, one at a time.
Yeah. Well, now we know that you've got a team of 25 people, and obviously you're growing. Do you have any sort of business tips? Did you know about smoking before you actually found this business in 1990? How do you scale up?
I was going to ask what attracted you to get into this in the first place, because that's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah. People often ask me, you know, was it a family business? No, it wasn't. I was qualifying to be a chartered surveyor at the time, and I decided that I didn't really want to do that for the rest of my life. No criticism to the profession whatsoever. It just wasn't something that I wanted to spend the rest of my life doing. And we are talking about 30 years ago now, and so I was actually quite young then. And I thought, well, what am I going to do? I've spent 7 years getting this far. And I thought, well, I better run my own business. And then I had to find a business to run. And this particular business came up for sale locally. And it was a husband and wife team. And I went and visited it. And I thought, yeah, I can do that. And part of the deal was that he would show me how to do it all. So we worked together after I bought it for about a month.
Right, okay.
And it was built up from there, really.
Okay. So you had absolutely no background in this when you started?
No.
It just looked like a good idea at the time, as I say.
I had an interest in food.
Right. Okay, cool. Okay.
And what's the challenges of scaling up? And we see quite a lot of people here who sort of on that kitchen table level, and they're going up to the next level. You've now got 25 people. You've been doing it for quite a while now. What do you think are the biggest challenges that you face, you know, over the years when you're trying to create a bigger business and one with a bit of solidity and a bit of longevity?
Yeah, I think you've got to just sort of be good at what you're doing before you expand. I think you've got to expand slowly. I mean, I've expanded over the last 30 years odd. Some people make the mistake of trying to do it all in the first year. I think you've just got to get good at certain things and then build up gradually. And that's what I've done. I mean, it hasn't always been a business with 25 employees. You know, it was just me to start with because I wasn't married at that stage. Then I became married, it became a husband and wife team. And then gradually we just took on more people as the business increased.
So your advice to anybody who's starting out, particularly in a food business, but any business, I guess, is make sure you know what you're doing, make sure you do it well, get the quality right, get the processes right, and then once that's sort of going along in a really nice fashion, then go on to the next stage, then go on to the next stage.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you need customers. And one thing that will lose customers is you doing a bad job or upsetting them. So you've got to keep your customers happy, and expand with them. So as you get more customers, you produce the end product that they want at the right price, and then they're happy, and then you can have more customers. But if you do it the other way and upset people, then you're going to end up with problems.
I can see that. I can see that. So if anybody wants to taste the amazing stuff at Wheeled Smokery, you can obviously go and visit them. But if you go onto the wheeledsmokery.co.uk website, that's where you can see all these wonderful, wonderful products. And personal favourite, Paul, of all the things you've done? I know what you're going to say, but your personal favourite?
It was all of them. I particularly like the hot smoked salmon because I buy that a lot myself. I love the I actually liked all of them. If you made me choose, the hot smoked salmon and the venison.
The hot smoked salmon, I think, is absolutely delicious. And I would say the venison for me, I generally don't like venison. It's a little bit strong for me, but that is the way it was smoked, it wasn't strong at all. Lovely.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
And you know, I would try that as opposed to having something highly spiced like salami or it's much nicer.
Yeah, absolutely.
And British, obviously. British.
Yeah.
So thank you, Andrew, for joining us. I really enjoyed that. And now we're going to go on to a little bit of cocktail ice cream. No, I was going to say ice creams. They're sort of frozen cocktails. And I'm joined
they're
here...
They're lollipopsicles, is what they is.
Yeah.
They're lollipopsicles.
So I'm joined here by Noah. And basically, he Noah conceived... Sorry?
There's Noah and Harry.
Noah and Harry. Yeah, and basically, the idea was conceived on a Miami beach when these two best friends, Harry and Noah, decided they wanted to package the taste of summer. Although we haven't had much of a summer to package this year, have we?
Yeah, but that doesn't matter, does
it?
Don't worry
about that. The result is a frozen cocktail, and each one has a shot of rum in it.
Wow.
And they produce two flavours, mojito and pina colada. And I believe, I'm going to ask them in a minute, I believe they're 10% proof. And the idea began when Harry's mum said, I wish I had a pina colada on a stick when they were on holiday. And that was it then. They were off deciding how they're going to solve that particular problem. But there is a real problem, Paul, with freezing alcohol, as you probably know. It's very, very difficult to freeze anything less than 2% sort of proof. So
yep.
How these guys have managed to do this, I don't know. Lick, which is the name of the company, LIC, and if you go on to lic.co.uk, you can find all their stuff. Lick has been recognised by IBM as and London Innovators as one of the top five products of the year in 2015. So, here we go. I'm going to ask, who shall I ask first? I'm going to ask Noah first. Noah, what have you got? What have we got there to taste? Just tell me.
So we've brought down the two flavours you mentioned before. So we've got our mojito and pina colada. We've actually brought down our third flavour, which is a strawberry daiquiri. All of them have a shot of rum in each one. So we use a Plantation 3-star rum, which is an awesome, awesome rum if you're a rum aficionado. But yeah, we've brought down a few samples for you guys.
Right.
Yeah, which one would you like to try first?
Okay, so Sue mentioned two flavours, but I saw you kind of waving your fingers and saying you got more. So go over the flavours again.
Yep, we've got a mojito. A pina colada and a strawberry daiquiri.
Okay,
I'm gonna try the mojito. I'm afraid that Paul doesn't drink alcohol, so he's not allowed to taste them. So I'm gonna do all the tasting on his behalf, and so I'm gonna taste the mojito. Now I'm gonna describe it. You know those like is it called Calypso? Those sort of ice lolly things.
Yes.
What are they called?
The Calypso's.
Calipers, yeah, yeah, that's,
that's it. That's right. Yeah. It looks exactly like that. So you've just opened one, and this is
very similar to that. It brings back the nostalgic kind of memories from when you were a kid. And basically, that's the whole shape. We wanted to turn it into an on-the-go cocktail, and it was the convenience of the Calypso tube itself that we wanted to reinvent it into its frozen cocktail form.
Wow. So I'm just going to squeeze it a little bit because it sort of sticks to the side. And then I literally just eat it like when you were a kid.
Push it up.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Paul, ask a question while I'm doing
okay.
This.
I'm just watching you doing that. That's really interesting. So go back to the beginning. Was it Harry's mum that expressed a desire for alcohol on a stick?
It was indeed. She's not an alcoholic, but it could be close. It was 3 years ago. In Florida, on the beaches in Miami, and she and I were throwing back ideas, and she said, I'd really fancy a frozen pina colada and a stick. And Noah and I have been best friends since we were 13, and I came back to him and said, we always used to bounce ideas back and forth to each other, and he said, this is a great idea, let's run with this.
Okay, so step us through the process, because you're both very young men, yeah?
Yeah, so we're both 25,
right?
So we've been doing this since we were 22.
Wow.
Nearly 26.
Can I just describe what they're wearing, Paul?
Yeah.
They've come in here looking like they are from Hawaii.
Yeah.
So they've got their Hawaiian little shirts on. They've got their they've got sunglasses. They've got shorts. Mm. And you think they've just stepped off the beach. They do just look like
that. Absolutely.
You've got to live it. Mm. Yeah.
You've got to live. You've got to live the brand. You've got to live the brand.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you had this idea sparked by your mum's comment. So tell me how you went about the process of investigating this, getting yourself started, and from a, I'm interested from a business point of view because I'm not going to eat the stuff. So Sue's going to eat it and tell us all about that.
But it's for adults only. It says in the packaging.
But from a business point of view, how did you get started? What did you do first?
Well, we both had internships at Diageo before.
Okay.
I was at Diageo in Park Royal.
Right.
Working in global accounts and then working at the global design. And now in Australia in the Bundaberg rum distillery. And so we both understood the different innovations that can happen in the alcohol industries and
what
you have to do to basically, you know, launch a brand.
Right.
But not all the hard work behind it. So we knew we had to crack on, first of all, with the formulation. So I looked up online the best universities to work with on the food science level.
Okay.
And Nottingham came up as number one. So we had a meeting with those guys, and one was an ex-craft developer, one was an ex-Unilever developer.
Wow.
And we spent about 6 months developing the science to freeze alcohol up to about 15%.
Okay, because I was going to say, because alcohol isn't an easy thing to freeze, is it?
No, it's the way that, sort of, if you think about it like a honeycomb,
you
think the honey in the middle. That's kind of how we get it to work. So the alcohol is the honey, and all natural ingredients that we use basically hold it in a lattice, and you can melt it and refreeze it, and it'll still hold it there.
So did you have to do a lot of experimenting? Did you? Yeah. What I'm getting at is, did you consume a lot of alcohol during the trials of this?
it was quite funny because the sort of first time we tried it, it was about 2 months in. We tried quite a few things. We were like, okay, I think this is getting close. So we tried it, and it was basically like an alcoholic gummy bear. So we're like, okay, back to the start, right?
Mind you, alcoholic gummy bears could work. Oh, no, probably not.
too close to kids. Even with our packaging at the moment, we have to make sure we go through all the proper loops to, you know, we've been passed by the Portman guidelines,
which
is the marketing watchdog for the alcohol industry.
Yep.
Because a lot of people critiqued from our very first Daily Mail press, and they said, you know, they've got to watch out for the kids that can get hold of this.
Yeah.
So the one reason why we're stocked in Sainsbury's at the moment is because we spent 2 years on developing this new packaging that allows us to be stocked as a liquid on the alcohol aisle, so that we're separate to being stocked, you know, next to the kids' products, like the Fab bars, in the frozen section. So we're actually legitimately on the alcohol aisle as a liquid. So you buy it and then freeze it back at home for your at-home occasions, for your barbecues.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That's a good idea. Yeah, I had all three, obviously, as you would expect, because it is my job. So I've got the strawberry daiquiri here. Do you know, it really reminds me of being a child where all my hands are freezing cold. Do you remember when you hold those things? So my hands are frozen cold.
The way you described it, Harry, it's a bit like a product that when I was a kid, we used to have things called Jubilee Blocks, which was a frozen orange thing, but you bought it as a liquid in the package and then put it in the fridge.
Ice pops, do you remember them?
Yeah, but
a bit like ice pops, I think.
The jubblies.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
And the problem with those is, if you remember, trying to tear off.
Tear the corner off,
You couldn't really tear it off without your mum having to get a pair of scissors and cut off the top.
Yeah.
And yes, it can. That's got a foil layer and a cardboard layer.
Yeah.
The problem with that, it doesn't feel premium. It still feels very childish.
Yeah.
And we needed to premiumize the packaging industry for what we're doing.
Right.
Because when it gets into alcohol, you can't make it look like a packaging that looks
like a kid's
packaging. Yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Well, I've just tasted them, and I have to say, the strawberry daiquiri is really nice. Very, very strawberry. Really, very summery, as you would expect.
Yep.
I do like the pina colada. I like the coconut taste, and I think that the alcohol and coconut go quite well. I have to say, for me, the mojito doesn't feel very alcoholic. I know it's the same proof as everything else, but if you didn't like alcohol, mojito's the one to have, because it feels just feels gorgeously, you know, chills out and all that sort of stuff.
The most gender neutral of our flavours is the mojito, which is why Sainsbury's took it straight on board.
Yeah. So if I had this, ice lolly thing, pina colada, it says it's 10%. How much is that? I mean, can I drive?
You can have two.
You're allowed two before you can't.
A shot of rum in each one.
So it's got a shot of rum.
Equivalent to a glass of wine. Those are our two little terms.
So two of these is equivalent to a glass of wine.
So the fact that you've just eaten four of them, so it means you're staying for the evening.
Yeah. Sorry, say that again.
So one of those is equivalent to a small glass of wine. So there's one unit of alcohol in each one.
Yeah. Harry's just eaten two. No, I'm only joking. And you know, we're, you know, then you can't drive. But I really like them. Are they proving successful? Are you?
Yeah, so we've gone on sale in Sainsbury's 2 weeks ago. Still got a week left.
Is this a 3 week? Just this 3 week trial? Yeah.
And we've gone on sale, so we're already on sale there, but I mean on promotion.
Oh, on promotion.
And yeah, we, you know, we're a small business. And we're expanding to sort of...
We've not got very long left on the show. Just quickly step us through how you're producing these at the moment. Are you outsourcing it to a manufacturer or are you manufacturing it yourselves?
Luckily, just down the road from where my parents live, from where I've been brought up in Northamptonshire, we have an ice cream factory and into the best of friends now with. So he actually helps us through. We've bought machinery from Germany. We've custom made it to fill our new packaging that we've created. We can turn out about 15,000 a day.
Wow.
We're signing distribution contracts now with, we've signed with Ibiza, Croatia. We're just about to get going with Greece. We're sending them out to Miami.
So you're exporting this stuff?
These guys are doing amazingly, aren't they?
That's chasing summer. I mean, that's the kind of aim of our brand. Mm. We've got to chase summer. We don't really want to be like Pimm's. We are quite seasonal like Pimm's.
Yeah.
But we need to make sure that we can cover our routes.
And by exporting it, you got to market all year round.
Exactly.
So how do you export it? Do you export it?
It's as a liquid. It's so easy to distribute this.
Yeah.
You know, that's the reason why we did it. You know, we are chasing scale. You can't grow a frozen business in the UK with just one product.
Right.
I think you've seen that with Walls. You know, they have to have so many products to make it viable.
Mm.
But you can outside the UK. Mm. So for us to distribute outside the UK, sending something frozen is a nightmare.
So if anybody wants to try your product, they need to go to Sainsbury's.
Exactly.
If they go on your website, lick.co.uk, and lick is spelled L-I-C. Lick.co.uk. Go on there and have a really good look. Is main target market millennials or is all sorts of people?
It's very broad.
Very broad.
So and Harry's mum, obviously.
Yeah. Harry's mum. Thank goodness for Harry's mum.
Yeah.
And I know you sell your alcoholic cocktails at venues like V Festival and Henley Regatta. Yeah. I can imagine these going down very, very well at these sort of events where the sun's shining, if the sun ever shines, and you know you're watching a band or you're watching the boats go past. This is absolutely perfect, and something you should definitely take on your picnic, I think, definitely. Thank you very much for joining us. I can't believe you're doing. Not only you've got a nice product, you
did you come in the ice cream van, guys?
We did.
Is it? We're going to take some pictures of that later. The guys rocked up in an ice cream van. How cool in every sense of the word cool is that?
Ice cream van. It's now the frozen cocktail van.
Is it?
Yeah.
Sweet. What we're going to do when we come off air, we're going to take some Periscope and some Facebook Live of it, if that's all right.
Yeah.
And,
have a good look at that.
Yeah.
And I'm really impressed by the fact that you not only got a great product, but these boys are businessmen and they really understand.
They've really taken
how
it. Yeah.
They get
absolutely
to market.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's interesting. We've got, you know, we've obviously got Andrew here from Wheeled Smokery, who's got a really lovely, you know, heritage business that he's doing. These boys are just going for it really fast.
Absolutely.
So a really interesting, sort of different ways of doing business.
Absolutely. And all powerful to you.
Yeah.
Sadly, we've reached the end of another show.
We have. Thank you to Andrew Wickham, Wheeled Smokery, and Noah and Harry of Lick, L-I-C, and Helena Hills, of course, of True Start Coffee that we talked to on the phone earlier.
Absolutely. So three completely different products that we looked at today.
Really good.
All brilliant in their own way. Hmm. But sadly, we're at the end of another show. Thank you so much for joining us on the Food Talk Show on Channel Radio. We'll be back with you next Thursday. You can hear the repeat of the show on a Monday, but we'll be back next Thursday. Join us and don't forget to follow us on the Twitter at the Food Talk Show and to look at our website where you can find recipes and all kinds of things.
foodtalk.co.uk.
Absolutely.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.